In the cinema, the pantheon of great filmmakers has few living legends. The Japanese animation producer and director Hayao Miyazaki is certainly among the greatest of cinema artists still walking the earth. And so it came as a great shock to many fans and cinephiles when Miyazaki announced in 2013 his intention to retire. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. If you don't know the work of Hayao Miyazaki, you should. He remains one of the most distinct visionaries of the cinema, with a career spanning almost 60 years. Among those who lamented Miyazaki's retirement was UTEP student Oscar Garza, who had begun work on his own thesis devoted to the work of this great animation master. I'm happy to have Oscar Garza back on the program today. Good morning, Oscar.
Good morning, Chuck.
I should note that you've already graduated, but last year, when you were beginning to think about writing a thesis for the liberal arts honors program that you were in, you remember the day that you heard that Miyazaki had decided to retire?
Yeah, I mean, almost everyone, I heard about it in the internet, and, you know, it was kind of like a shock, but, I mean, this guy has just been doing some incredible work for 20-plus years since the late 70s, practically, so...
And we don't think of great directors as retiring. We think of them dying on set or working hard in their old age trying to get a film made. You know, the notion that a director would just choose to stop making films. But he's a very interesting fellow. I want to get to the thesis you've written, and this was for the Liberal Arts Honors Program. I know you've presented your paper several times at conferences here at UTEP. What made you want to focus in your thesis on the work of Miyazaki?
Well, for one, it was kind of like a religion and film type of thing. And I wanted to focus on kind of like other stuff that wasn't really usual when you think of religion and film. And so Miyazaki's work is just layered with ideas about Shintoism, which is Japan's native religion. And so that kind of really attracted me, just looking at his films from that point of view. And you can practically see it's just... It might not be obvious to people who don't know about the religion, but it's definitely there.
Yeah, his films come across as fantasies and whimsical and with lots of animated creatures, of creatures that have powers. But walk us through what Shinto is and how that found its way or manifests itself in the films.
Well, for example, it's a very it's an animistic religion, which means that they kind of perceive that everything has a spirit. And so they believe in noble spirits called kami. And you can definitely see kami-like figures. For example, the most obvious one would be Totoro from My Neighbor Totoro.
Right.
But also in Princess Mononoke, there's the noble sacred spirit. And in Shinto, they strive towards this idea of communion with nature. It's one of their central themes. And Miyazaki's work is just, that's one of the main ideas throughout his work.
He himself is not a devout follower of Shinto.
No.
Yeah.
No,
that's... Which is interesting.
It is definitely interesting.
But he works within that cultural milieu to, you know, he grew up, I guess he was born in 1941, and culturally he's infused with that, and the culture in Japan is infused with that. It goes across all sorts of artistic forms, and he blends all of that into his films. You mentioned nature and the noble spirits in nature, and I think one of the themes, if people know the work of Miyazaki, most of his films, if not take a dim view of technology and the effect of industrialization on nature, there's always a conflict, though, between what man's imprint on the earth is and the effect it has on the natural world.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's probably one of the main conflicts in his newest film or his last film, The Wind Rises, but also you can see the idea of technology practically since the beginning, since probably Lupin the Third, all the way through Nausicaa, through Castle in the Sky. And there's kind of a, for example, in Princess Mononoke, even though he has the idea of, like, the conflict might not be ending at some point, might not have an end point, it definitely has a cycle. And so it's this kind of cyclical battle of nature and humanity taking hold.
One of my favorite moments is in Spirited Away, when there's a river spirit that's a big amorphous blob type thing that comes into this banquet hall and just starts disgorging all this garbage and sludge and all, you know, it's literally vomiting up all of this stuff that has been dumped in the river.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's the purification ritual of Shinto, taking visual. But also it's a very powerful and beautiful image as well, because at the end, the river spirit simply says to Chihiro, which is our main protagonist, girl protagonist, he just simply says, you know, thank you for getting rid of all this stuff for me. And just, you know, humans have been dumping trash and God knows what else into the river.
You know, in American animation, which is heavily focused on Disney and the output of the Disney studios over the last, since Snow White and even the earlier shorts, but the entertainment that came out of that, certainly there are anthropomorphized animals and talking mice and, you know, just all sorts of characters that have been anthropomorphized by Disney, but when you watch a Miyazaki film, what is it that makes it so distinctive, contrasting with maybe what most American viewers think of as animated film?
Well, for example, just the 2D animation is very stylized. There's a poetic worshiping of wind and the elements as well.
Yes.
And just the idea that his films often are as... they're very mature. They have these kind of very powerful themes about warfare, about, you know, conflicts between humanity and nature. They're very heavily centered on also on girl protagonists.
And
he's one of those that, you know, does great female characters as well. And so that sort of idea is definitely present throughout his work.
Do you remember the first Miyazaki film you ever watched?
Oh, yeah, Princess Mononoke. It was just the first time I saw it, I was just completely mind blown by it. But also I was so into the kind of grand and, you know, epic scope that he creates with it.
Yeah, and cinematic, too. I think the first thing I ever saw having children early on was Kiki's Delivery Service, an early film of his, which is not as grand and epic as some of his later work. But immediately I was taken with how filmic it was compared to a lot of American animated films. The shot sequences, the delineation of movement. You talked about wind, and even though it's a two-dimensional image you're seeing, he imbues it with so much depth and richness that we frankly rarely get in American films.
It feels like a live action film only done in 2D animation.
Yeah, and the detail is extraordinary. Yeah. And most of it, even up until his latest film of this year and last, was that a lot of it is still hand-drawn, hand-painted, which makes it very distinctive compared to where American animation has gone in the last decade, where Disney, I think 15 years ago, got rid of all of its hand-drawn animators and studios and went completely digital. And, of course, Pixar has been digital from the get-go. But Miyazaki, still, you can find the imprint of the human hand in all of that work. And I understand that Miyazaki himself, on every film, would render and draw a good chunk of it.
Oh, yeah, in Princess Mononoke, there's that story that he animated a lot himself of that film.
You mentioned his latest film, maybe epitomizing some of the themes of his life. The Wind Rises, which was just in El Paso theaters, and I think will be out in home video this summer at some point, is his final film, or so he says.
He said that before.
If his retirement holds. Very different, though, than a lot of his other films. It's very earthbound. It's in this world. Most of his other films exist in a world like ours, but somewhat different. And it's almost a biopic of an aircraft engineer, of all things. The developer of what would be the prototype for the Mitsubishi Zero, the Japanese fighter plane, which is an interesting choice.
Definitely.
To go out on your final film.
And that's why I think it's been so controversial. But the fact that he treats it so elegantly, and the fact that he kind of has his whole summation of how he feels about life and
war.
And war and pacifism as well, and technology. You know, like some critics have called it an anti-war film. Some critics have definitely called it pro-war. It's definitely been heavily controversial. But you can definitely feel that, you know, this is his kind of almost thesis film. Like, this is exactly how I feel about life, about warfare, about technology, et cetera, et cetera.
he would have grown up. Some of his earliest memories may not have been of the war, having been born in 1941, but he certainly, his formative years and earliest memories would have been of the destruction left after the war. I think he was born in Tokyo. And some of that finds its way into The Wind Rises, but his love of flight, you know, is summed up so beautifully in this film. And if you know the films of Miyazaki, there are always these magnificent flying machines of every variety, whimsical and not. I also found it fascinating that it's, I don't want to say it's his most mature film, but it's certainly focused primarily on adults, actual adults, some of which are historical figures. There's smoking. There's just normal adult dialogue.
Yeah,
it's fascinating to see him use his extraordinary artistry to work in that kind of genre.
Definitely, it at times feels almost like a Terrence Malick film.
That's a great way of putting it.
And it feels very subtle. It's just, you know, adults having dialogue. Even the conversations between Jiro and his wife Naoko kind of have this very mundane way of, but loving way of talking to each other, and it's just very, very subtle. It's probably his most straightforward romance as well.
Mm. Yeah, and tragic.
And tragic romance.
Yeah, there's that too. One of the things that I'm sure saddened us both about his retirement is not just that we can't look forward to the next Miyazaki film, but for me at least, it seems there's a dearth of filmmakers, international filmmakers who are so rooted in their own culture but have somehow found a world audience. Today, with a world marketplace for films, a lot of filmmakers in their home countries are becoming so homogenized in their product, whereas Miyazaki somehow found that world audience without losing his distinctive voice.
Yeah.
And that is rare.
That's definitely a conflict that you see as well in The Wind Rises, you know, the fact that you know, it's all about this creator's integrity, and it's, you could say it's also very autobiographical as well, even though it kind of deals with another person's life. And the idea of flight is heavily ingrained into Miyazaki's earlier work because his father was and worked as a kind of airplane designer. He worked with a Mitsubishi company, I believe.
If you could pick one film for people who have never seen a Miyazaki film, what would it be?
That is a hard one.
Just one.
Probably like Princess Mononoke or Spirited Away.
Great starting point. Well, great art, great cinema. Adults should not feel like they need to have kids around to watch these films. So thank you so much, Oscar.
Thanks a lot for having me.
We've been surveying the life, work, and impact of one of the cinema's most distinctive visionaries, the Japanese animator and director Hayao Miyazaki. My guest is soon-to-be graduate student Oscar Garza, who in his final year of undergraduate studies at UTEP wrote extensively on Miyazaki and the cultural and spiritual underpinnings of his work. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.